All right, here we go on a Wednesday. It is Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon. We are back in studio today. That's because we got some afternoon baseball. Royals, Cubs, they'll wrap up the series in Chicago at Wrigley Field. Rubber match of this three-game series. Then we're back in St. Joe tomorrow and Friday and Monday and Tuesday. So we'll be right back up there. Just a shorter show today. So obviously it didn't make any sense to drive up there for just the 2 hour show. But tomorrow we'll have another member of the Chiefs join us. Same on Friday and same next week as well, and provide you coverage throughout the entire show. We'll also keep an eye on anything that breaks, if anything, from camp today. But remember, they're still not even in pads. And same thing as yesterday, Cody, when we were up there. Josh Simmons, first team reps at left tackle. Jalen Moore, first team reps at right tackle. Nothing has changed in that regard after one day.
Great start, though, for Drew's camp, darling.
Yes.
I saw a tweet, Drew, that said Jake Brittingstool today received a couple of first team snaps.
Oh, let's go. I think he's immune. If you're receiving first team snaps,
I gotta be honest. You could make an argument that a first team snap should keep you from elimination in week one.
We drafted 9 players for our official camp, Darling Island. Somebody's getting eliminated tomorrow on the show. And yeah, the rule is if you start to get some social media buzz about a player, that player cannot be eliminated that day. Now, getting first team reps, we can debate tomorrow if that qualifies
as immunity.
You know, I'll admit, I took a player just because of the name, and barring something crazy happening today or tomorrow at practice, I'm
Spivey's
worried that
trouble.
Jaquarius Spivey is might be the first guy voted off Camp Darling Island. But here's the thing. All of a sudden, he plays in a preseason game, and he gets a catch or two and a touchdown.
It to a preseason game.
I know.
That's the problem.
That's the danger for a lot of these guys.
Like other reality shows, is someone allowed to come back after they've been eliminated? Could someone re-enter?
Well, we could have
make it back on the island?
You never know, man. It's reality television. You know, it's unscripted. We don't know what's going to happen either. That's the beautiful thing about it. You know, could have the most dramatic elimination show ever.
Man, can't wait. Mm-hmm. Can't wait. If you haven't been following, we just started Camp Island. We'll give you a chance to catch up on that again tomorrow.
You guys,
with our first elimination.
You guys can hit us up on the Jay Southland Tow Service text line, 913-586-7965. We'll have the video stream up momentarily. It'll be up here hopefully very soon on Facebook, Twitch, YouTube. Make sure you subscribe. That way you don't miss any of the shows here on 96.5 The Fan. We will talk some Royals baseball here in about 8 minutes or so. Not only about Rich Hill, but also if you follow us on social media, some news about who could be coming back up, or not who can, who will be coming back up for the Royals. You can follow us on Twitter at Alex Gold, at Cody B. Tapp. But yesterday, right after we got off the air, you and I were getting in our vehicles to drive back from St. Joe. And I was like, well, this is kind of surprising news. And it was at the time news that Tyrann Mathieu was retiring.
And a couple days before camp seems interesting because we all assumed he was going to play football.
The night before camp. And then we were thinking, okay, where is he at in Chiefs history? Where is he at in NFL history? And we had him on the show actually during Super Bowl week. He called in, and at that point in time, and we obviously are trying to get him on the show again to find out why now is the right time for him to hang it up and everything, because I actually think last year he had a decent season. My assumption is also not only that he just had, I believe him and his wife just had the birth of another child, but also this is a Saints team that very clearly in 2025 is kind of in tank mode. Like, do you want to be part of that? I mean, they literally yesterday, they being Kellen Moore, said that they're going to give equal reps to 3 quarterbacks during training camp. I mean, what a freaking mess. Ugh. And those quarterbacks are like
Tyler Shuck,
Spencer Rattler, and Jake Haener. I mean, so maybe that, by the way, that's just,
that made me quit.
I don't know.
I'd want to not play football if that was the case.
I don't know if that's why he's retiring. I'm just saying it wouldn't surprise me if a combination of things led to that. Anyway, you and I have debated before in the past about Tyrann Mathieu standing in Kansas City. I told you,
we talked about Chiefs Ring of Honor once. It gets brought up on the text line every once in a while.
He is one of my favorite Chiefs players that have been part of the last 20 plus years. And we go back to the day he was brought in, and along with Spags, he completely shifted this defense, completely changed the culture, and jump-started this run. I recognize that Patrick Mahomes is the biggest reason why they have had their success. But Tyrann Mathieu is a huge reason why the run that they are continuing to go on started to begin with when he arrived. And I know it was a short tenure in Kansas City. He wasn't here for 5 or 10 years. He was here for 3 years. And obviously, he's a very emotional person, and some tweets that were sent out irritated, rubbed some fans the wrong way. I totally understand that's part of his story as well. But this is somebody that won a Super Bowl, in his career. He's a three-time All-Pro, three-time Pro Bowler, All-Decade team. I actually think that the stronger conversation and more interesting one is going to be 10 years from now or less, and will be, one day, does he end up in the Pro Football Hall of Fame? Not a first ballot. I'm not making that case. He's not going to be a first ballot. But a guy that we talk like Jared Allen, which is he's eligible for 4 years or whatever, and then like, is this the year? I think he has a decent case. I really do, to get to Canton at some point, not in the first year or two, but at some point. When you're on an All-Decade team and you have a ring, that's a big hurdle to clear, I think, for a lot of Pro Football Hall of Fame voters. And he's a three-time All-Pro. The Pro Bowls don't really matter, okay? Is three-time All-Pro.
No, but somebody will mention it. You would like maybe a few more Pro Bowls, but obviously safety is a difficult position. Mm-hmm. Look, we've gone on here, and I told you I wouldn't put him in the Ring of Honor. He played it for 3 years.
Yeah, I think he should be.
It's crazy. He played it for 3 years. That's it. And I know he helped break the seal and revitalize the defense on the way to their first championship in 50 years.
I can tell a story that gets him in for the Chiefs Ring of Honor.
But I have to tell a story. I can't back it up with any. It's just like emotion. So it's an emotional Ring of Honor.
For a Chiefs Ring of Honor.
Not. I understand, for a team Hall of Fame, it doesn't have to be just about counting stats.
Yeah, it's a team Hall of Fame.
It could be about vibes for that argument. I genuinely think, though, he has a better and stronger argument for the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Look, if you go through the All-Decade team, only about half of those guys probably are worthy of being Hall of Famers. I'm not at any point throwing Eric Weddle into the Pro Football Hall of Fame, even though he was an All-Decade member. And that's not to pick on him. There's a few guys on the list that I don't think are NFL Hall of Famers. But being on an All-Decade team does still hold some weight. When you couple it with All-Pro,
with a ring, holds some weight. And a ring, yeah.
And a ring, that also helps. Man, if he had won that second, I don't even think people would question about him being a Hall of Famer. What he gets hurt by is a huge chunk of the dominating part of his career was in Arizona for a team that didn't matter, because he was a dominant player then and a great college player, but that doesn't matter for the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, no, but a hell of a player at LSU. Yeah.
But so when you look at it from that perspective, the key part of his NFL domination took place in Arizona, and that hurts him. That hurts him. I do think he could get you mentioned the Jared Allen nod at some point, where the way sometimes I view Hall of Fame, and this is where I think position should matter too, is when we watch them play, did we all agree that they were one of the five best, 10 best, 15 best players in the league at what they were doing? I think we all agreed at the time Tyrann Mathieu was doing it, he was one of the best players in the entire NFL. Well, then I don't need, if some of the accolades match that, and he's got a Super Bowl ring, well then, yeah, why wouldn't I put him in the Hall of Fame? It doesn't have to just be that. Because, I feel this way about running back.
Yeah.
Running back shouldn't have to do it as long.
Look, it's never cut and dry. Whether we're talking about Team Hall of Fame, Ring of Honor, whether we're talking about Canton, it's never a cut and dry. There is not one path only that gets you to that place.
No.
So, for those that are texting, and I think this is why it's a fun conversation, because I think you can make arguments why he shouldn't be, and I think I can make some arguments also why he should be in. This is the whole point of a conversation and what's fun. A lot of people are saying 3 years, you just can't be in a team Hall of Fame. And that's what I would push back. And I would say, okay, so then what's the length? Is it seriously, is it 5 years? This is what my point is. I don't know what the right criteria has to be. It can't just be, it has to be a Super Bowl and 5 years and a Defensive Player of the Year. Or there's not just,
it's only guys who are
because stuff weighs
JJ
heavily.
JJ Watt's accomplishments or nothing?
Let's say if we were talking about a player that won a Defensive Player of the Year, but he didn't have a ring and he was here for 5 years. Is that the same as a player that was here for three that has a ring that wasn't Defensive Player of the Year? How do you, there's not a clear cut path for that. People, a lot of people mentioning Eric Berry. Let's remember too, there's a lot of members of the Chiefs Hall of Fame or Chiefs Ring of Honor that don't get in until 20 plus years after the fact. I mean, Kimball Anders just got in 2 years ago.
I don't think he should have gotten in, but that's
I have
fine.
No problem with that. The team may not have had success, but Kimball Anders, that was a guy that played in the late 90s, early 2000s, right? So it took 20 years for him to get in. So you're telling me 20 years from now, Tyrann Mathieu couldn't end up in the Chiefs Ring of Honor? I think he absolutely could.
Guess here's the truth. Their success hurts Tyrann Mathieu in the Ring of Honor, because if we're just talking about guys who have rings, the list currently for the Chiefs
is not just that, but again, that's my point. But that's my point. It's not just the rings.
No,
I'm not saying to give every person that has three rings on the team in the Ring of Honor or two rings, because that's a bunch of guys.
Well, two rings, it would be Blake Bell, Allegretti, McCole,
James Winchester,
Kenny Winchester. Do you know how many people they would have to put in?
That's my point. I'm not arguing just
Rashad
because
Benton out here in the Chiefs Ring of Honor.
I'm not arguing just because he doesn't, or just because he has a ring. And someone's saying Derek Johnson isn't in. That's my point. Nobody gets in 2 years after. Like, it can take 20 years to get in. I don't know why we have this thought that, like, hey, this player's not in, so he can't be. Derek Johnson likely gets in at some point in his career. It might be 20 more years for Derek Johnson. I don't know. Again, it took Campbell Anders 20 years. It took Grunhard quite some time. He was fairly recent in the Chiefs Ring of Honor, and we all agreed, I'm sure, that he should be in, but it took a long time. So nobody's saying that because there's former Chiefs in the last decade that aren't in yet that nobody else can be in. Like, Alex Smith isn't in yet. We all think he's getting in,
yeah,
and he will. Absolutely, he should get in, and he will, but it could be another 10 years till Alex Smith gets in. I don't know. Hopefully it's sooner.
And obviously, like, if you go back and you look at that time, he reshaped a defense that eventually helped them go on to win a Super Bowl and all the stuff that comes with it. But on my whole thing on, like, the Chiefs Ring of Honor is, like, even on that team, there are, like, five guys who should be Ring of Honor guys ahead of, you know, like, 10 guys. I don't know if it's
10.
Like, five.
10.
Don't make me look it up.
I think we're, look, because of the tweets and because year three wasn't the best, we're forgetting how freaking dominant he was in year one and two to really jump start
year three was fine.
Jump start this dynasty for the Chiefs. I think we're downplaying the role he had on that. That's all.
Here are the players I would put in the Chiefs Ring of Honor. And looking at the roster ahead of him, if I were voting, Harrison Butker, I assume, would be in the Ring of Honor before him.
Yes.
Frank Clark.
Probably, yeah.
I mean, played here longer.
Yeah, probably
one
so.
One more title.
I have no problem with him getting in.
What do you think about a number one overall pick in Eric Fisher? Does he get the nod?
His is trickier. I think he was also someone that nobody appreciated enough.
Probably. Tyreek Hill for sure. Chris Jones for sure. Kelsey for sure. Mahomes for sure.
Andy Reid.
So, like, I'm up to six or seven now. Now I think you officially enter Tyrann Mathieu territory.
Well, yeah, that's nobody saying Schwartz, he is a better case
sure
than anybody else you mentioned already.
Yeah, Mitchell Schwartz for sure. Is there any other? Now I'm just trying to look at any other defensive players that maybe I'm not giving any left to. No, that's probably
is McColey.
So he's probably like
Chiefs Hall of
no,
Fame.
No, true.
No,
no. Hey,
Tyrann Mathieu has an argument.
Now we're just disrespecting.
I'm just hang on a second.
No, I'm just because I said he shouldn't
no,
be. I didn't say
no,
I.
Hang on a second. I just asked. I didn't say he belongs in there more than Tyrann Mathieu. I just asked.
Okay.
He's got some bigger plays in the Super Bowl. He's won multiple times.
Now
I was just asking.
I know.
We don't
right
have to be disrespectful.
But now, we could disagree. Right. We could have differing opinions on Tyrann Mathieu. But now we're just being disrespectful. We're trying to argue that there's any similar type of conversation between Tyrann Mathieu and McCole Hardman. Come on.
I just asked.
Because you were naming players. Like, obviously, Allegretti's not getting in there, you know. Blake Bell's not getting in there, Cody, just because he won two Super Bowls. Obviously. I know it's just the players that you mentioned a moment ago. Jeez.
Like, we're acting like we're talking about Kadarius Toney here, people. We're talking about Tyrann Mathieu. Come on.
He definitely isn't getting in.
It's all, like, for his, it would just be like it's like the honorary doctorate. The, like, Lifetime Achievement Award. It's like, you didn't actually, like, statistically, you're not the kind of Chiefs player that we would typically put in the Ring of Honor. We're only putting you in there for vibes. That's all I'm saying. It's not like an actual, it doesn't feel like an achievement honor. It feels like he was a part of a Super Bowl win.
The first ring that started this dynasty, yeah. Tyrann Mathieu was the most vocal leader other than Patrick Mahomes on the team.
You're saying,
and he played at a high level. That means something to me.
Gold, you're saying that his impact goes beyond just the numbers that he put up. Like his presence, which is where I think you have an argument there, is that his sheer presence gracing the defensive side of the ball for the Chiefs helped elevate them to get to where they were. I think there's a conversation there. Also, the NFL, like the Pro Football Hall of Fame, is not going to put him in for that reason. But I think
different conversations.
But I think in terms, even the Pro Football Hall of Fame, like in terms of the character and all of the things that you mean to the organizations that you played for, I think Tyrann Mathieu, you know, as it pertains to what you're saying, Alex, actually makes it. It's not going to get him into the Pro Football Hall of Fame, but I think it's something that you ought to also consider in terms of the greatness of the Chiefs dynasties and him helping elevate the defense to be what they were afterwards.
Okay, so yesterday I kind of thought the Royals might have been thrown in the towel lineup-wise. Is it related to Rich Hill in there? Is Bobby Witt Jr. hurt? He is not in the lineup today, and I got to be honest, the lineup ain't good.
Well, let me tell you, so this makes us wonder more because we were already playing. I had heard this morning that MJ Melendez is getting called up from AAA Omaha. Now, the Omaha Storm Chasers are in Syracuse, and so my understanding is he was getting out on the first flight this morning from Syracuse to meet the team in Chicago, but because of, you know, travel time, the likelihood of being there for today's game is very slim, if not impossible. So what you're now saying with the lineup not having Bobby in there. Now, if you watched the game last night, you know that Bobby at one point in time, his spike got caught. Yeah. He twisted his knee. The trainer came out. He stayed in the game, by the way, and but he wasn't playing in the field. And so it makes you wonder if they're being cautious. I don't know if it's related. All I do know is that MJ Melendez is getting called up. I don't know if that's going to take effect until Friday, though. Remember, they're off tomorrow. We can have a separate conversation about Bobby and MJ if you want to separate the two in a second. But I don't, are they connected? I don't know. But MJ Melendez in the last 20 games or so, 23 games, since June 20th, his numbers have been drastically better, of course, than what they ever were in Kansas City this year. And he's going to be back up with the big league club. He had 323, six homers, 16 RBI, and 12 walks since June 20th.
So he's been very good. And yeah, we can keep talking about, I don't know what the next step is.
Maybe they're being cautious with
Bobby. From MJ Melendez, yeah. Last night in postgame, Q said, quote, it was nothing. That's what he said last night after game. That doesn't mean you wake up this morning and like, my knee hurts. Because today's lineup, and then we'll talk some MJ, Frazier, Garcia, Pasquantino, 1-3. Frazier hitting leadoff, playing second base. Perez, Cags, and Rave hitting 4-5-6. Fermin is catching. Tolbert is hitting ninth and playing third base. Did anyone know he was capable? Did anyone know he even played third base? Like, what? Frazier, so the infield today is Tolbert at third, Garcia at short, Frazier at second, and Vinny at first? Cags and right? That's, I mean, for a team
Tolbert's
that's
played short and second, so I guess, why not third?
Yeah, fair enough, I guess, at least on that end. I will say, genuinely worried about Bobby. We can talk about that in a minute. From the MJ perspective, just because he never misses games for any
reason. That's jarring to see, for sure.
So, but on the MJ stuff, it is kind of crazy that he's coming back up, and I'll be honest, he should have no weight on his shoulders at all. Other than, I guess, he could be worried about, like, is what's left in my career or this kind of stuff.
This is his last shot with this
club. Royals, for sure. Yeah. I never thought he'd get another bat for the Royals. Genuinely. I didn't think he'd play for the Royals again. I thought they'd include him in some trade this deadline or in the winter and figure out some version of that to work him through. So at least he gets another chance. And I'm going to guess that part of the reason he struggled in AAA when he first went down there was the devastating news that you were hitting 085 and you got to be a AAA player again. And not for a short period of time, for months and months.
Yeah, I'm sure there was a mental hurdle to clear there. I mean, you're someone you had been in the big leagues for multiple years. You get sent down, you know you're not playing well. And I'm sure there's a lot of things that are going through your mind at that point in time. And to his credit, since June 20th in particular, he's obviously been playing very well. We'll see if it translates. This is his last shot with the Royals. You and I do know there's also the reality, whether it's this trade deadline, whether it's the offseason, could he be part of a trade as well? He's a piece that is with a bigger piece. Yeah, I mean, everything's on the table there. But knowing what they have still not gotten from the outfield production-wise, and if you're someone, and I'm on this side, I don't want them trading for a rental outfield bat, then this is your best option at this point in time to see if something has been corrected or not. If not, then you move on in the offseason or something like that. But yeah, my guess is he'll make his return officially Friday back at the K, but they were in Syracuse last night, and so he's in Chicago or on his way to Chicago or whatever.
So just meet with the team and then catch up with them there and then cruise on the west away back to Kansas City. Makes sense. Rather than just fly you back to Kansas City now, if that's the case, then he could just play today for AAA. So we got to get at least a look of it. But yeah, I'm hoping for MJ's sake that all of this was a big wake-up call or he solved some of his issues. Because look, he went through all those swing changes. And they were major and they were significant and they didn't work. And maybe he's still going through those and they are actively working to try to fix those things, and it's finally clicked in AAA after two full months of being down there. But I will say, after watching yesterday's defense and looking at the defensive alignment for the Royals today, I do not think, seeing how this is a team that does not score, that they are worse off offensively with MJ Melendez, but I know for damn sure they're better defensively.
Well, like, last night, oh my gosh, dude, like,
oh, everyone just kicking the ball around, man.
Last night was an offensive, truly defensive effort. Last night was like the little league stuff. I mean, mistakes you just can't make at the big league level. It was embarrassing. It really was. And I understand going into the game, you knew they were going to be defensively challenged with the lineup that they threw out there to begin with. And when you look at that, and you say, hey, we're gonna risk defense tonight, basically, for offense. Well, the offense wasn't there. And then the worst case scenario of what you got defensively happened. Rich Hill, who made his 2025 debut at the age of 45, got zero help from defense. Not that I thought he pitched great, but also he wasn't like the problem. He wasn't a disaster, other than everybody was stealing left and right on him because his delivery. And
I actually thought Rich Hill was okay.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. He was not the problem last night. He had guys kicking the ball around, guys dropping pop-ups. No, that was when he wasn't in the game when that pop-up happened. But you get my point. Like, it was pitiful defensive effort last night from them. That was a really frustrating game to watch against the Cubs.
Royals make another acquisition. Small, don't get excited. The Royals have acquired right-handed reliever Joey Kreibel, according to reports from the Rays.
Joey Kreibel, man. Wow.
Mark Tompkin of the Tampa Bay Times says that the 32-year-old Kreibel is not even on the 40-man roster. He's currently pitching Triple-A Durham. After signing a minor league deal back in January, he has pitched in four different seasons in the bigs, posting a 3.65 ERA in 74 big league innings spread across those four seasons. Last pitched in the majors in 2023.
That's Kreibel, Joey Kreibel.
Okay. I don't know if that's pronounced right. I'm just letting you know that they've made an acquisition.
Kreibel?
Could be either. Does that mean they're trading a reliever and they want another guy at the big league level?
No, it means that at this point in time, my guess is
they sent down Hoffman yesterday.
Rich Hill is now up. Yeah.
I think it's a bodies thing.
Depth thing.
I liked that all of their moves in AAA, all of their prospects are an A-ball, is essentially my opinion of this. Everybody of note, not everybody, I know there's a few, but like most of their minor league system is all in A-ball, maybe a few in AA of the guys that you're like, okay, there's some hope. So this year, every time they've had to call someone from AAA, they're like, we don't have anybody we want to put in AAA right now. Go find an old guy. So Dallas Keuchel, Rich Hill, and now Kreibel, who's a journeyman reliever who last pitched 2 years ago in the big leagues in this version of it. But this all goes back to the same thing. You had mentioned the MJ Melendez news, and someone's response was, MJ's back up, well, the season's over. And I'm like, Rich Hill pitched yesterday. He's 45. They signed Dallas Keuchel 10 days ago. They've been under 500 for a month. Are you just coming around to this thought?
Yeah, they're pitching, pitching depth-wise is a mess because Kyle Wright and Alec Marsh did not progress the way they thought they would in terms of injury and rehab. Just didn't. When we talked in spring training, we talked on opening day. It was like, yeah, it's going to take some time, but they're progressing. Then it was a little setback. He had another setback. And that's happened for multiple guys. And so it's been tested. And as you said, Lorenzen's currently on the IL, although I guess he's eligible to come back in like 5 days, something like that, right before the trade deadline. It's being tested. And it's kind of this perfect storm right now. We all know the team offensively, the struggles, the back of the bullpen here in the last week has been shaky, week and a half, go back pre-All-Star break. And then, as you said, Rich Hill is starting games for this team right now. That's all you need to know, with all due respect to him. So it's just, it's a mess. And it's why, when we look at next week's trade deadline, anything that doesn't involve bringing back a player that has control beyond this year is ridiculous. It has to be. We can talk about selling, but it has to be for players that have control in 2026 as well and beyond. And there's rumors this morning, a report from I think it was The Athletic, right, that the Royals are maybe interested in Boston's outfielder Duran.
Yep.
But that would involve Seth Lugo and a prospect to make it happen. So, and in that report, it says one of the catching prospects, we can all figure out who that is. That's either Blake Mitchell or Carter Jensen. Carter Jensen's in AAA playing great. Blake Mitchell had the hammock bone injury during spring, hasn't played a whole lot this year. He's further down, I think, is that double A or A ball? High A? Double A? Double check on that one. I can't remember. But either way, he's not in AAA. So, if I told you Lugo and Blake Mitchell for Duran, right?
A ball.
And he's got 3 years of control. That's what it would take.
Look, we'll talk about those trades at 11. There's a lot of stuff circling around with who people want off of the Royals, both in the minor league system and in the major league system. But yeah, It's been their depth has been tested, but I won't be lying. I'll be waiting for a quote from one of the people who cover the Royals. Someone telling me about Bobby Witt Jr.'s knee.
We'll keep an eye on that. We'll also find out. Maybe I have to wait till Friday on the corresponding move. As I said, I'm hearing that MJ Melendez is getting called up, but you and I think maybe they'll just finally drop the third catcher. Why do they need three catchers at this point in time? But we'll see what that move might be. Up next, let's get to the NFL a little bit. An AFC team that could make that surprise jump. Does one exist in 2025? Back here on Cody and Gold, a reminder, Royals day game today at Wrigley Field. Josh Vernier's On Deck show coming up at noon as the Royals wrap up their series against the Cubs. So we'll let you know if we get any word on what Q maybe has to say about Bobby Witt Jr., who for the first time all year is not in the lineup. He played 161 games last year. This would be the first one missed this year. We all know last night he clearly tweaked his knee a little bit. A spike got caught. It was bugging him. Assumption would be, and hopefully meaning that something, you know, didn't turn out to be more serious. Assumption would be, hey, he hadn't had a day off all year. He tweaks his knee. It's a day game, short turnaround today. We're off tomorrow. Let's give him basically 2 days in a row off and be good. That's hopefully what this is.
Same day as India getting the day off too. I got to say, yeah. This lineup's either scoring 10 or zero. Baseball
getaway
allows
day
for
lineup.
Only the two.
Getaway day lineup.
I know, but like this is the most getaway day lineup of all time. Are you kidding me? Tolbert's playing third. Mm-hmm. Frazier's hitting leadoff. And I'm not anti-Frazier trade, as we made it clear on this show. But, like, whew, that's a tough one.
This would never have happened if Cam Devaney was here. Anyway, all right, let's talk about the NFL in the AFC. And,
he's not on the team anymore. Let's move on.
Has he played yet for the...
I have no idea.
I thought he got optioned as soon as he got traded, didn't he?
Yeah, just
Cody was wondering if he's playing for AAA Pittsburgh. You know, whatever their affiliate is.
I'm going to be following his career closely.
As a matter of fact, it's Indianapolis.
Of course it is.
What's their minor league team name?
The Indianapolis Indians.
Oh. Wait, they're allowed to keep it, but Cleveland had to get rid of theirs? If I was Cleveland, I'd say, screw that.
What?
Wait a second.
That's still their name?
And I will say this.
If Cleveland had if I was Cleveland, I'd say, wait a second. If the minor league team's not changing, we're not changing.
They do.
That's unreal. I did not know that. Hey, I did not know that.
The logo and the mascot should change.
Wait, hold on. What's their logo? I don't want to go down this road because obviously it's a very relevant topic right now around the Washington Commanders.
But also, minor league teams should have fun names. Do you guys watch John Oliver helping rename a team for the St. Paul, maybe?
Look at the mascot, too.
I'm looking at it. What is that? It's like a...
You're looking at Rowdy, the mascot?
No, it's just the logo on the minor league website for Indianapolis. Oh, it's like it's too small for me to...
I am surprised that... I don't know if they've been asked to change. I couldn't tell you.
Anyway.
Anyways, yeah.
Nobody noticed, I guess. That's probably what it was. Minor league team, you know?
Go under the radar a little bit.
Mm-hmm. I don't know how I was expecting Rowdy to be spelled, but...
R-O-W-D-Y?
Mm-hmm.
No.
Huh?
That's not how they spelled.
R-O-W-D-I-E?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
That is how they spell it. Yeah, I don't know. We don't have to get into the...
We don't.
Apparently.
No, we don't.
I was like... I don't think I want to do this.
Let's talk some NFL, please. Let's please get away from that and talk some NFL,
let's
specifically the AFC. And we all know the NFL, at least when it comes to teams that make the playoffs or division, there's a lot of parity there. And we'll get into some of our predictions as we get closer to the season and everything. But is there any AFC team that you actually think could be a surprise team that jumps up? Like, all right, we know Baltimore and Kansas City and Buffalo are going to be there.
I'll even give them the honorary.
Yeah, Cincinnati is obviously clearly, I would think, the next team after that heading into the season. But is there anybody else that you actually think could jump up and be a surprise? Because Baltimore has the best odds to win the AFC right now. That just changed in the last 24 hours. It was kind of tied. Over at FanDuel, Baltimore's plus 340. Buffalo plus 350, and then the Chiefs are sitting at plus 420. After that, it's a big drop off. Cincy's 11-1, and then you have teams like the Texans, the Chargers, and Broncos 12-1, 13-1, 14-1. Is there anybody from that group or further down that you think, you know what? All of a sudden, we're going to be talking about them. Not to say that they're tier one, but they're a playoff team, and they're somewhat of a surprise. I don't know if you could even tell me that the Chargers or Broncos fit in the surprise category. If they win 12 games, I don't know if it's a surprise necessarily.
That would still surprise me. Same with the Texans, a team that kind of fell back last year. Any of those I think would count for this conversation is in. If they enter the Pantheon and they are as competitive as the Bills, Ravens, and Chiefs, that is a surprising note that they have jumped into that grouping even for a single year. I mentioned Pittsburgh only because I guess if Aaron Rodgers just found it and they had TJ Watt, I'm supposed to probably
it's
take
Pittsburgh
them somewhere
or New
serious?
England or New England. It's that or New England that you think in year one, Mike Vrabel gets Drake May and that team back to a respectable level enough to where they take the leap. The only reason why I'm hesitant with them is so many people are kind of talking up the Patriots like, all right, they're about to make a big leap. And I'm out of the rookie class. I don't think Drake May is terrible. I just don't think all that highly that of him in terms of the ceiling. Mm. You know, I think his ceiling's slightly higher than Bo Nix.
How about Jacksonville?
35-1.
I'm a Trevor Lawrence hater, I'll just be honest. It ain't them for me.
I like the I will say, you know,
their offensive weapons are there. I'll give you
that. The offense looks nice. You bring in a new head coach, potentially, with the relationship. You know, maybe he can get... I know this is Trevor Lawrence's, what, his third different head coach?
Yes.
I mean, it's been as chaotic almost as as Caleb Williams' situation has been in Chicago. I'd look at the offense, and I wouldn't be... Not that I would say totally surprised if they did jump up. I would be surprised if they went 10-7 and made the playoffs. I think it would be...
Jags? Yeah.
I would say it's enough to... Is that what you're talking about, where they make the playoffs as a wild card? Or do you mean like actually...
We're starting in the playoffs. Yeah, I'm talking about we make the playoffs and one of these teams looks like they've been on par all year with the teams at the top.
Well, then I don't know if it's Jacksonville then. I think Jacksonville could sneak into the playoffs. I don't know if they're a...
You don't think they're a 12-13? Because you got to be a 12-13.
No. Yeah,
I guess viewing it differently then. Because, yeah, if it's what you're, if the criteria you're saying,
you're
then,
saying no.
Then it's not New England either, and it's not Pittsburgh
either.
Well,
then let's limit it to the teams that could surprise.
If it is entering the Chiefs, Baltimore, Bills, Cincinnati tier, or just the three at the top, the only teams that have any chance would be the Chargers and Broncos. Those would be the only two that could elevate to being... in the conversation for one of the top couple seeds. And that, of course, means they have to win the AFC West. They're the only two teams that could be there. If we're just saying, like, kind of how I was approaching a little bit, just, hey, they're a team that surprises us, makes the playoffs, or wins a playoff game that could surprise this kind of thing, that's where we get into, I think, the New England's, the Jacksonville's of the world. I think that's kind of where I would be, at least.
Jacksonville, I don't see it. You're
not a Liam Cohen believer.
Look, it served me pretty well to this point, being a disbeliever in that. I don't think Trevor Lawrence has it. Or if he has it, it's has it in the way Baker Mayfield has it, and he's going to need to get his ass out of Jacksonville before you ever see it. Like, he's going to need a fresh start, clear his head, be free of the nonsense that comes with being a Jacksonville Jaguars quarterback, and restart his life in a completely different team and his career with a completely different place. Because the weapons he had last year, Brian Thomas was a star last year.
Yeah.
And that team still stunk. I don't think they have a good enough offensive line. I don't think they have a good enough defense. I just think that... I don't think Trevor Lawrence is good enough on his own.
I wonder if Liam Cohen is the guy to kind of unlock what... Not to say that Doug Peterson's a bad coach, but Urban Meyer certainly didn't have it. I mean, he was too busy... threatening players and everything like that.
Duval.
Travis Hunter's is so much better.
Now the Liam Cohen is the great one.
Duval.
That's the one we're looking for. I don't know why these are labeled very weird. I spent way too much time looking for that clip while you guys were talking.
Duval.
I do think
I'm renaming that something much easier to find.
Like,
it's just labeled Liam. I need better than that.
I don't know if you would agree to this, guys, but I think Trevor Lawrence and Caleb Williams are in very similar positions now, where I don't know how many years apart they are in terms of being drafted, but Trevor Lawrence, this is it for Trevor Lawrence, where I think some people think this is kind of it for Caleb Williams as well, in terms of you got to show us something now, where you've got good players on defense, you've got the offensive weapons, you've got the head coach now. This is where Caleb Williams takes that next step, where this is, I think, the same thing with Trevor Lawrence, is you've got a young head coach, first time, offensive weapons are there, you got Travis Hunter coming in, just won the Heisman and everything. This is the year for you to prove it, or basically put up or shut up.
Yeah, I gotta say, so I definitely agree with you. Caleb Williams, he has so much pressure entering the season, because last year we thought he had a ton of weapons, but then we quickly realized, we kind of thought at the time anyway, his head coach is horrific. And so now we know he has a great offensive mind. Doesn't mean that the Bears are going to win 12 games, but he's got a great offensive mind around him and plenty of weapons, revamped offensive line. No excuses for Caleb Williams. Trevor Lawrence, I think people have now caught on to the, maybe he's just a guy in this league, and he's got a chance this year to go out there. And if he bounces back, he can once again put himself in the category of, all right, maybe I am one of the top 10 guys. He clearly is not to this point in time in his career. Yet, no. But if he does it this year, then we can change how we talk about him again. Otherwise, yeah, he's just going to be viewed as, all right, he's a guy that's going to play football for a while in this league.
He also has to stay healthy because he had the concussion stuff that was really nasty last year.
That's fair as well. Yeah, Jacksonville. And that division, the AFC South, like, if the Texans' O-line is still a disaster, we all know they drafted a couple young receivers, but, you know, without Tank Dell and stuff. If the Texans struggle to protect Stroud again, then is there a chance the Jags or the Colts can emerge? My issue with them is it's Daniel Jones or it's Anthony Richardson. Go ahead.
Did you guys see what Chris Ballard said yesterday?
I did not, no.
They want to give Anthony Richardson time. He was preaching that yesterday.
Well, I think Daniel Jones is starting week one.
Time to what?
That's what I'm saying.
Daniel Jones is starting week one.
They've mishandled him this entire time. They brought him in. They started him right away. Now they're saying give him time. They benched him. It's a complete mess.
Like, a lot of this is like someone just said on the text line, who's a better passer, Trevor Lawrence or Justin Herbert? Every single thing in their
probably. It's definitely
by a mile.
I think it's Herbert for sure.
Again, at least Herbert's put up the stats, and his team's won a little.
Herbert's put up the stats. Trevor Lawrence, in fairness, did beat Justin Herbert in the playoffs, so I think that there's also that kind of caveat, but
it's just
Herbert's the better quarterback.
It's one game.
Herbert's the better quarterback.
Like, again, we can think playoff wins matter, championships matter, championship appearances matter. It's okay for those things to matter. We cannot make one individual game mean everything as far as comparison between two people, because it just doesn't do any good to mock it up that way, or, you know, who knows? Like, maybe Mark Sanchez has a winning record against Roethlisberger. We're not here trying to argue one guy better than the other because of singular playoff wins or whatever.
Mark Sanchez is the example that you absolutely would use in that scenario.
Yeah, he's made two AFC title games. You'd be like, I'm sure he's got a winning record against some better than him quarterbacks, right? Like,
oh, yeah.
We don't have to do that just because the team's there. Look, if we're just seeing sneak up teams, Pittsburgh might actually be my answer. And I'm barely a believer in that, I'll be honest. But it's just, if for whatever reason, two years ago, Aaron Rodgers shows up for even three quarters of a season. Yeah. They have some offensive weapons. They certainly have the defensive players in order to do it and the coach in order to make that work. It's a tough division, so you'll notice it immediately if you think that they enter the conversation.
Well, I think there's a real chance by October 1st, we're having a conversation, and nationally people are having a conversation. Hey, are we buying into the Steelers? Because, guys, I think there is a decent chance they are 3-1.
What's their opening
Here's their schedule. They open up against Justin Fields and the Jets.
A win.
Then Seattle, toss-up game. Patriots, I'll call it a toss-up game. Then the Vikings, they'll be underdogs in that unless J.J. McCarthy looks like crap. And then they have the Browns.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
3-1 is not crazy. We could be sitting here saying, Mike Tomlin's got this team 3-1. What the heck? And then we'll be like, are they for real? And then quickly reality sets in. They have games against the Bengals, Packers, Colts, Chargers, Steelers, or Bengals again. That's when all of a sudden they come back to the Bengals.
Unfortunately.
They've completely dominated that. That series has been incredibly lopsided.
I think they're going to get up. If I could bet on like the opening four game record of the Steelers, I would love to know what odds I get at 3-1, and I would take it.
Drew, I will say, I saw today a headline from Pro Football Talk that said, Cincinnati planning to play Joe Burrow more than ever in the preseason.
Zach Taylor's guy got some plans.
You're saying it like he wasn't an idiot the other years
playing. He definitely
is. Good for him for making the shift, by the way.
3 years later, I appreciate it for finally waking up. Maybe the rest of the organization can wake up, too.
Remember, Jamar Chase basically said, I know I should play more in preseason, but basically I don't want to. I mean, like,
you plan on playing in preseason?
That's not up to me. If it was up to me, I wouldn't be out there.
He will be playing more this preseason.
If it was up to me, I wouldn't be out there, even though I know we suck in September.
And hopefully, that means maybe they can start out 1-1. I don't even want 2-0. Just give me 1-1.
Hey, because Drew,
that's good. Not greedy.
If Zach Taylor has another bad September, you hear people are talking about Nick Saban?
Yeah, I saw that yesterday.
Nick Saban being the head coach of Cincinnati.
You gotta admit, aren't you all at least a little intrigued
by Nick
Saban as the head coach of the? And I saw him for the I saw him as a rumor for the Cowboys too. Why would he go back to the NFL? Can you explain that to me?
I think he would answer a phone call more for the NFL, just because.
Why? He coached there for a year and a half and blew out of town. He hated it.
Yeah, I think that with what college football kind of became towards the end of it, I think there's less it's more football related stuff that you're dealing with in the NFL, and maybe that would sound more appealing. If he comes back to coach at all, it would be in the NFL, I think, than college for sure. I saw Nick Wright's point about why Nick Saban would be good for the Bengals, but I don't know if that's the right decision. I like the concept of him being a leader and all those other things, especially for the Cowboys as well. I mean, you're talking about the same sort of thing, a leader, guy that's got a proven
73-year-old head coach.
But yeah, I just don't know. I don't buy that.
It's all the trend these days. And Look at the AFC West. They're hiring nothing Saban, but old men.
Yeah, but the Raiders aren't expected to do anything. Where in fairness, if the Bengals or the Cowboys hired him, the expectations are already through the roof for the Cowboys anyways. You know, I just think that anything that they do would just be underwhelming.
I got to say, his winning percentage is better than Zach Taylor's.
In September? What's his September winning? Just hire him for September only, actually. That's the move.
That
might be it. Don't fire Zach Taylor. Just have Nick Saban from August 1st to October 1st. Nick Saban is the head coach.
I am all for that, actually. I'm all about it. I actually like that.
He's the head coach till October.
Just for the first 2 months.
I love it.
God, you're gonna make me look up Miami's 2005.
I just mean even in college. What's Nick Saban's September record?
Probably. Hang on a second. In college, hang on a second.
I bet it's 102.
I need his September record. It's got to be great. 99.
You mean when he was playing Western Kentucky to open up the
That's
season?
Right. Uh-huh. Hey, it counts.
Sure.
He had a couple of those. LSU every once in a while play one of those big dog
Chick-fil-A
games.
Chick-fil-A kickoff.
Oh, yeah, of course. Like Alabama would play a team that they would smoke, Miami.
He was 2-1 in September, his first year in Miami.
Sign me up.
He was 2-1 in Miami. They only played three games in September the way it worked in Miami that year. So he's 2-1 that year. That might be more wins total than Zach Taylor's got every year as the head coach. And he was 1-2. He's a perfect 500.
Which is better.
500. Yeah, what's
Zach Taylor?
Coaching.
Like 2-11?
I would not hire Nick Saban if I were them, but I love Nick Saban. I think the idea of, can you come here and just be a part of the organization from July through September, the middle of September, please, and just help us out a little bit. Make sure we're ready to go to start things off. That would be great.
Honestly, the Saban thing, it feels like every time I feel like I've got a handle on what's going on with the older coaches, I'm like, Carroll's not coming back, or certainly Belichick wouldn't coach in college. Yeah,
everything's
crazy.
On the table. Everything's on the table.
I can't rule out.
Evidently.
Because of the way the coaching stuff has gone recently, can I reasonably say, no. There's no chance Nick Saban would become the head coach of a college football team. I can't.
If you were to go to the NFL, though, Dallas makes so much more sense because of the weather and all the other stuff. Plus, Miss Terry's got a say in everything. I feel like she would be okay with Dallas and Arlington. Not that Cincinnati's a terrible place, but in terms of the weather, when it gets down to, you know, November, December, January, maybe you'd rather be in Dallas.
Why would his wife want him working again?
I don't think
he's 73 and he's probably worth $100 million, isn't he?
Yeah, and he's able to golf as much as he wants to and hang out at home. I think Miss Terry is quite happy. I do think though,
sometimes we forget about college
with him being on
like
TV.
They hang out all the time at home. If you have an established relationship, in which the established relationship is that we work when one person is gone a lot, and then all of a sudden you're just near each other all the time, that could throw off the...
You're saying there might be home drama at 73 for Nick Saban?
I'm not claiming they don't like each other. I'm just saying there's an established balance
of course.
How our relationship works.
However many years.
Yeah, and now I'm just here all the time.
Yeah.
Like, that could cause, like, my wife and I, right? She works from home and I don't. Let's say I got a job and I had to work from home, and all of a sudden we were just both working from home all the time. Mm. I'm not saying that can't cause a problem. It could.
It's a little bit different. Yeah.
Right. It's throwing off the balance of what our relationship has been up to this point. So like maybe she's like, yeah, get your ass out of the house. Go coach the Dallas Cowboys. I don't care. Sounds good to
me. Go coach the Cowboys. Let me relax.
Please. Cincinnati. I don't know why. I mean, other than I guess just like
it'd be for Joe Burrow and Joe Burrow alone. It would be.
He's just doing it because of the LSU connection. He didn't coach Joe.
What is Ed Orgeron going to be?
Ed
Orgeron is going to be the special assistant to Nick Saban in Cincinnati.
Honest to God, I genuinely think I could have been the head coach.
Ed Orgeron's just chilling
and we might have won the title.
Ed Orgeron's busy just chilling in Destin, Florida.
Yeah, that's right.
He's good for him.
Nobody looks more like he said it's 5 o'clock somewhere while wearing a Margaritaville t-shirt in their lives than Ed Orgeron.
Or Ed Orgeron's just not wearing a shirt, period. He might just be there in some swim trunks.
Yeah, I mean, Ed O might, if he's ever in Kansas City, he might just be at the Margaritaville Resort over there in KCK they just built.
Oh, 100%.
Ed Orgeron's just going to be chilling out over there.
Residency there is what he looks
he
like.
Bought
yes.
a, he didn't buy a day pass. He actually bought a week's hotel stay there.
Official, by the way, Gold, MJ Melendez has been recalled from AAA. Nick Lofton placed on the 7-day concussion injured list.
Okay.
As a corresponding move for the Royals. Cotero will talk about it coming up in about, I think, now or so.
Okay.
But yes, official, as Gold had reported earlier over on social media, and we talked about it at the show. MJ Melendez recalled from AAA. Nick Lofton heading to the 7-day concussion IL.
Okay.
So, if you're curious whether or not that's taking place.
Nick Lofton, that play was, there was, it was on a throw. So Caglione, not on the outfield assist that he converted on. Cags threw another dart to third base.
Also, no Bobby on the IL, which is good.
Yeah, threw a dart to third base, and I believe Nick Lofton got clipped by the base runner last. I'm assuming that's the play.
Yeah.
Yes, I'm assuming that's the play that it happened on.
Where he made the tag, and Cags made the throw, and they got the out at
was
third.
Also, it was on the actual outfield assist. Yes.
It was in the outfield assist where Lofton kind of got bounced around a little bit on the tag. That's probably almost exactly where it is. So now we know exactly where it is. The idea that also, because they could have announced if Bobby needed an IL trip, it felt like you could have announced this thing at this moment as well, and they didn't announce that, so that also feels like good news, I guess. And because Q's getting ready to talk to the media here in a few minutes, we'll get a sense of where that injury is and where they are here going forward. Look, MJ's got 7 days to prove his worth to this team. If he's just on the 7-day concussion IL, he's got to hit, or he's going to get sent right back down to AAA, right? If it's specifically
unless
for
there's a,
this
unless
7-day IL, unless there's a trade.
Unless there's a trade. But I also still think if they were all playing well, then the corresponding move still is. This team is keeping three catchers right now. I don't get it. I really don't get it. Fermin's healthy as far as we know, and so is Salvi. I don't know why they need three catchers. So I think that would also still be another
Massey
move.
Comes back. Another move
they make. With one of those moves will probably result in them not having a third catcher. Yes.
Like, there's just a, you know, lot of difficult decisions, I guess, at least on that end. But again, they can't hit. So if MJ comes up and hits, you can't send anybody down, in my opinion. And you got to play him. If MJ just comes up and he's just, like, hitting 300 for a week, he has to play. If you're going to score as little as the Royals do, as consistently as they do, you don't have a choice but to play any player right now who's hot. That's why I think John Rave has been getting so much more time than some of the other guys who got called up at a similar time, similar to Lofton and some of these others. Rave has been getting more of the time because he's hitting the ball. And it's very that, it's honestly, Gold, that simple for MJ Melendez. Come up, hit, and you'll be okay. As you sent out the stats earlier, since June 20th, MJ Melendez is hitting .323 with a .394 on base, 1,000 OPS, 6 home runs, 16 RBI, and 12 walks. So he is hitting well. AAA pitching, for whatever it's worth. AAA pitching since June 20th. So maybe there's some connection there, and maybe he's started to figure out whatever the changes are he needed to make. But this is a guy who once led all the minor leagues in home runs. So if they want to take one more shot, for all the people who are like, how come Cam Devaney never got a shot? And I know MJ did. I'd rather let MJ hit for a week and just see if they've got something before they do the early release, right? On maybe Ryan O'Hearn or some of the other guys who Brent Rooker. I'd rather get a shot.
I don't want them trading for a rental outfield bat. And so you're now calling up somebody that was your opening day left fielder, obviously didn't even hit 100. That's why he got sent down to AAA, got off to a rocky start in AAA, and you just went through the numbers again since June 20th. You're taking another dart throw to think that has he corrected some things? Is he also just maybe in a better headspace than what he was as well?
Take one last look.
This is your last opportunity. I'll push back. I don't think it's just he has 7 days to prove himself. I don't know about that, but
depends on what happens to the trade deadline. In fairness,
but he could be part of
right up.
He
right
could
it.
Be part of a trade. Absolutely, that's in play. Everything's in play at this point in time. Still for the organization long term. I mean, if you're asking like heading into 26, the best case scenario is somehow he hits well the rest of the way. But we'll see. But he is called back up. And Nick Lofton on the concussion list. Up next, we'll get to the 11 o'clock hour. Remember, we're only on for another hour today because Royals are playing in Chicago against the Cubs at Wrigley Field. Afternoon Baseball, Vern's on Deck show is at noon. Up next, we'll get into more of the trade rumors, including some percentages on guys getting moved, according to ESPN.com. That's next. 11 o'clock hour here on Cody and Gold. 1 hour from now, Josh Vernier takes over his On Deck show as the Royals wrap up their series in Chicago out at Wrigley. If you're just joining us for the first time today, the Royals did announce Nick Lofton is heading over to the concussion list. MJ Melendez, now it's official. We talked about that to start the show, but now it's official. MJ Melendez up from AAA Omaha.
A lot of you not a fan. Although, I don't know, man. Offense. Look, when they sent down, I got to be honest, by the time we come all the way around to this, when Michael Massey gets called up, they'll just come full circle.
Yes. In terms of, other than Hunter Renfro,
Unless they pick Hunter Renfro back up. Yeah. It'll be Massey back in the lineup, MJ back in the lineup. I mean, we're right back where, we've come full circle. We're right back where we started. And I understand, like, somebody's going to point out, like, selective endpoints if you say June 20th. Really, MJ's been hitting pretty well since, like, June 1st.
Yeah,
he's just hitting really well.
We'll see if it translates to the big league level.
Since June 20th. So it doesn't matter just if he doesn't hit in the bigs, but yeah, we'll get back to that. Let's talk about the trade stuff, though, because ESPN.com, Jeff Passan had more stuff out there today. Kylie McDaniel and the other guys who handle the minor league side of stuff were working together about the biggest trade prospects or biggest trade acquisition targets for Major League Baseball. The way Eugenio Suarez has been hitting, not shocking to find out, he's probably the number one guy on everyone's bucket list right now. Stephen Kwan has skyrocketed to the top of everyone's list, and reportedly the Guardians are listening very seriously to those. But there's two that stand out. Number four on this list is Seth Lugo, or five on this list is Seth Lugo. He puts a chance of a trade at 80% for the Royals to let him go, including the best fits of the Cubs, the Astros, the Blue Jays, the Padres, and the Dodgers. All teams that would like to go down that road.
The Cubs will get a first-hand look at Wrigley today.
They sure will. And look, they're going to need him to pitch great based on that getaway day lineup and have Seth Lugo do his best. And so that, okay, fine. We all agree that that was kind of the case. They talk about the kind of guys like, well, you know, in order to get some of those bigger-name prospects, it might not just be a rental. What can they get? But they're expecting him to do it. Where it gets tied in is the Athletic article report to go at the ESPN. Because the number three trade target for teams is Jarren Duran, the outfielder for the Boston Red Sox, in a very, very, very crowded outfield. Now, they only put the chance of him being traded at 25%. But the most recent report saying that if the Royals wanted to trade the Red Sox Lugo, a player they would have interest in, but would not give up Duran for a rental, they would have to include, likely, one of their catching prospects to go with it. So I guess, simply put, would you trade Blake Mitchell or Carter Jensen with Seth Lugo to the Boston Red Sox for Jarren Duran, a player who has 3 years of control after this year and would still have the remainder of this year to improve your
outfield? Yeah, do I think Duran is, the piece mentioned this too, is Duran a superstar outfielder? No, okay,
he
no.
He had a superstar year last year.
Yeah, is he that? Probably no. But is he extremely athletic, above average outfielder? Yeah, I think with multiple
Much
years.
Better than yours?
With multiple years of control? Yeah, I think Duran fits that. If you're asking me which Royals catching prospect I would be willing to trade more than the other, that one's a challenging question because right now Carter Jensen's in AAA, and so he's already closest. Blake Mitchell's an A-ball. So, you know, the Royals have to rely on their own internal scouting and projections for guys on which player. And I don't know which, by the way, also which player would the Red Sox be more interested in? I don't know the answer to that. But would I do, in general, one of those two catchers and Lugo for Durant? Yes, I would do it. You're going to have to give up something to get another team's player with control that also happens to play outfield, which is also the position we know. Now, if you're looking at the Cubs who are interested in Lugo, I don't know what that's going to take. That gets back into the Owen Cassie or whatever. But reports have been recently that now maybe they're just purposely putting that out there that the Cubs are not willing to trade that Owen Casey or Cassie kid, their number one prospect. But they also may just be putting that out there at this point.
In a 3-year sample in which he's been a full-time starter in the major leagues, Duran's been really good. He was a 2.2 WAR player 2 years ago in 2023, a 295 with a 346 on base. Last year, and I did not realize this with Duran, a guy who could be on the block? This is how deep their outfielders are. He was an 8 WAR player. He led the majors in doubles. He led the majors in triples. He hit 21 home runs to go with it.
Yeah, he's 28.
He also had 34 stolen bases and hit 285 with a 342 on base. This is why I think the Royals are probably serious about him. He is a prototypical Royals outfielder. A good athlete who plays good defense, who gets triples and stolen bases. Come on, Gold. Does that sound like every outfielder they've tried to draft for the last decade in the Royals organization? He's tailor-made. And you get him for years 28, the rest of this year, 29, 30, and 31. All right, fine. That's a perfectly lined stretch. He's going to get owed, I think, $8 million next year as a club option and then 2 years of arbitration. So maybe he's 3 for 30, maybe 3 for 40 as a player. That's a number that you can stomach. And right now, because Seth Lugo's a rental, a player that you could hypothetically re-sign in the offseason if you wanted to, I'd be all over this. Stop. All of your prospects are in A-ball. Letting go of Blake Mitchell, yeah, in addition to it, would be an easy move for me if Duran was really on the list.
Yeah, I mean, this would someone's saying, see, these are two unrelated. This is the perfect world stuff that doesn't exist. Someone's like, why not just trade Freddie? Well, yeah, but that's not what it sounds like we'll take, right? Like, of course, yeah.
I would also
like to trade. Look, Freddie Fromm's been a great player for this organization, yes, but I also would like to trade the guy that's not a top prospect in my system to get a deal done. But that, if you're telling me and the reports are true that it's Lugo and one of your top catching prospects, then you can't say, well, how about Freddie? It doesn't work that way. Yeah, I would also be willing to do that instead of trading Carter Jensen or Blake Mitchell. But
they're not going
to. I would make the trade if it took Blake Mitchell or Carter Jensen, if that's what it took to get Duran. The other part of it, you know, will be interesting to see, Cody, is it's not just the Royals that are interested in that. Like, do the Royals have the best package to offer? Because the Padres are interested in Duran. The Giants are interested. Philadelphia is interested. You know, so what does that look like? And do the Royals have the most competitive offer? The reason why the Red Sox are willing to trade him is not because they're not happy with him. It's just that they have some unbelievable prospects they just called up that are outfielders. Roman Anthony, the Rafaela kid or whatever.
They're
like
loaded.
They have a bunch of young studs. It looks like they just called up this year. They don't need to hang around.
And they love shedding payroll for whatever reason. Yeah. So like Duran's owed more money, and maybe they don't think he is the player he was last year.
Are you going to make a Duran song if he new one?
If he ends up here, happily. If he gets traded, on deck.
I can just see it now. Because all I can keep thinking of is Duran whenever we keep saying Duran. So if it's a big if,
he somebody says traded. I trade Luke Mayo for Duran straight up.
Yeah,
they're obviously being sarcastic.
Yeah, absolutely, why not? Yeah,
it's not that they just want a catcher; it's that they want a young catcher in their system, ready to be like the guy who comes up here in a little bit. It depends on. And look, truth is, I'm almost always more willing to trade the person who's in the lower levels because Carter Jensen has proven he can hit an A and double A and now triple A. So he's done it at every level. I've never seen Blake Mitchell pass A-ball.
Yeah, he
dominates A-ball. He's been hitting in Arizona coming back from the injury still. So, like, I'm not saying Blake Mitchell is obviously as good of a prospect as Carter Jensen was. Carter Jensen just further along. And some of that is, as I know Salvi's getting closer to the end, I might want a player a little closer to that eventual timeline.
Text line saying they're hearing that Cam Devaney would have been the piece to seal the deal if they still had him, but that's going to blow up the whole trade. That's unfortunate. Coming up in 9 minutes, we will get to the trash of the day. We have to briefly talk about the circus that is the Dallas Cowboys, because the Dallas Cowboys
are always a circus.
Always are. They always wait to the last minute to pay their stars. The last two off seasons, it's been Dak Prescott and CeeDee Lamb. We know Micah Parsons wants a new deal, and just 2 days ago, you had Jerry Jones publicly talking about a player in which they gave money to that's been hurt since then, and just stuff that you would never publicly want your owner to say about a player that is important to your franchise.
Just because we sign him doesn't mean we're going to have him. He was hurt 6 games last year. Seriously. Jeez. We've signed, I remember signing a player for the highest paid at the position in the league, and he got knocked out 2/3 of the year, Dak Prescott. So there's a lot of things you can think about when you, just as the player does, when you're thinking about committing and guaranteeing money.
What are these? This is 2 days in a row between Mike Brown and Jerry Jones.
Now we just pretend like players don't get hurt? Well, old man yells at clouds is what it's been the last 2 days in the
NFL. It's the fact that these things are being said publicly. That you were publicly saying, hey, we gave Dak what he wanted, and look, he got hurt. I mean, these are players that are putting their body on the line for you and your organization. Yes, they're very well compensated, and you're now acting like, you know, well, this
do
is why
they
we
give
don't...
you the best chance to win, Jerry. Yes.
So then Micah Parsons, this was not a scheduled media availability.
It was impromptu. Him and Trayvon Diggs were together.
Yeah, this was not a scheduled media availability after their training camp practice. This would be like all of a sudden if, you know, Trent McDuffie, and he would never do this, but if Trent McDuffie just went up to the group of the media after practice and was like, I want to talk to you guys. I got some things to say. And it wasn't controlled by the, like, set up by the PR staff. That's what happened yesterday with Micah Parsons and Diggs. Here's what Parsons had to say on a long-term deal and what would it take to get done.
I don't know. We'll see. We'll just see how long things take, you know?
Discouraged by the fact that it's taken this long?
Honestly, yeah. When you go around the league and you see these other teams taking care of their best guys, I see TJ got taken care of, Max got taken care of, Miles got taken care of, and he got 2 years left on his deal. So it's hard to, yeah, you see a lot of people around the league going taken care of. You just, you know, wish you had something like, you know, that same type of energy. You know,
it's hard to not take it personally.
I wouldn't say it's hard not to take it personally when you know how there's a, when there's a, you know, chain of events of something consistently happening over the course of years, when you kind of see it before through other players and things. So you don't take that, you don't take it personally when you're like, all right, this, it's not like I'm getting treated differently than anyone else, you know? So I don't take it personally. I just don't understand.
Sounds like a player's just fed up with the whole situation.
He's talking about the Dak deal where it took forever and Jerry took his time with that too.
But I mean, also just saying, because like, the player got hurt, I don't want to pay him any money.
My guess is that this still gets done like 48 hours before the start of the season. And once again, the Cowboys will have to pay more because they wait. And this is the process Jerry Jones enjoys. It's almost like, despite how embarrassing it might be, he just loves the fact that here we are, we're talking about the Dallas Cowboys in some form or fashion. And that's been Jerry Jones's MO for the last 25 years. He's cared more about that than actually going out and letting maybe someone that can make some better financial decisions from a football perspective. Right. Like, you know, we know he's a salesman. He's been unbelievable at that. The franchise is worth unbelievable amounts of money, very successful, all that in terms of financial business side of things. But on the field, like him and his family making the football decisions has been an absolute disaster.
I got to say, I think Kevin Clark yesterday put it like he's saying very similar to what you're saying.
Idiot things can turn into good decisions.
That's the best one.
But it's there's so many good Jerry drops. But it's exactly the way I think you're putting it. Quote from Kevin Clark yesterday. When I look at Jerry Jones, I think of one thing. It's if the football gods came down and said, Jerry, you can get wins the next three seasons. You can get Super Bowl wins in the next 3 years. But the catch is you can't do a press conference. He looks at the football gods and says, no deal. Like he wants to hear his voice more than he wants his team to win.
You think I'm an idiot? Do you?
And I think there's a lot of truth to that. I really do. But also, like, Micah Parsons, I mean, he just straight up said, he said, I'm not doing this for Jerry. I'm here for my teammates. Mm-hmm. I'm not here for you. Not you, Jerry, specifically. I am here just because I'm not trying to put my teammates in a bad spot.
Yeah.
That feels like the kind of guy you'd want to sign, right, Drew? The ultimate team guy who's working even under duress.
Who's
and not
one
even
of the best
the
at their position. Sure.
Who's one of the best at their position. Yeah.
They're gonna
that
end
feels
up,
like the kind of person you might want to give a contract to.
Yeah. Again, I think they will sign him, but it's just the mess. Someone said, is that AI Jerry Jones? No, that we play the real Jerry Jones clips. I think the morning show has some funny AI.
Oh, do they?
Jerry Jones ones out there. I swear, these are real. These are from a radio interview months back that we've saved in the system.
Don't really think you're going to sit here with a microphone and tell me all of the things that I've done wrong?
Oh, man. I mean, it's all-time stuff, you know?
You want some conversation this morning? You're getting it.
He's such a comic book character.
He's a good actor, we learned from that one.
Oh, you know
Smiles
what?
And glory holes.
He was really good in that. What was that?
I'll get somebody else to ask these questions, man. I'm not kidding. I'm not kidding.
Could you imagine if the owner, if Clark Hunt threatened to fire us on the air? Oh, my God. Sorry, somebody else answers these questions. Like, I am not kidding. I am not kidding. Like, damn, Clark. Be cool.
You must be smoking on something this morning. There's so many good ones, all from that interview, basically.
Mm-hmm. I don't take teams seriously who continue to do, like, I mentioned Cincinnati, but, mm-hmm. like, Dallas. There's a few teams that do things so wrong. Like, when the Carolina Panthers, when Dave Tepper went into that bar to complain about their sign. You're worth $1 billion and you own an NFL franchise. You can't be going into local bars. Like, take that sign down that's mean about the Panthers. Like, okay, not a serious team. Got it. I'll just eliminate from you until, like, and I did that with Washington forever. Once Washington got a serious owner, they immediately were a relevant franchise.
And got more support from the fan base.
The second they got a serious owner who you should take serious, they immediately became a relevant franchise. That can't be an accident. Who is going to run? So we know that it'll be Stephen Jones.
You've got to be smoking something over there this morning.
Who's running the Bengals after Brown?
Probably Katie Blackburn in the Blackburn family, which is not something that many fans are excited about.
I mean, it can't be worse. It can't be worse than their current ownership.
It really do.
That family is currently also involved in the operations with Mike Brown, so you would think nothing's going to change, which is just going to be worse. It's going to feel worse.
We're keeping an eye out at Chiefs camp as well. Just a reminder, we're not there today as a result of...
Back tomorrow.
Back tomorrow.
A lot of good news for our teams, though, guys.
Back to Friday. I got to say, Camp Island is going to be tough.
Yes, tough tomorrow.
If you guys missed it, we announced Camp Island, where we choose the camp darling of the 2025 season. We're a part of the system now, right? We're going to try to help you guys choose it. We all drafted 9 people to enter Camp Island. Only one can end, as somebody pointed out on Twitter earlier, said, new bombshell entering the villa, is it? Because Jake Brenningstuhl caught a touchdown. Rashard Smith had a wheel route touchdown today. Lots of guys running with the ones. Jalen Royals, Tyquan Thornton, Omar Norman Lott, all running with the ones today. It's going to be tough. I will say there's been one player of all of the Camp Islands who has gotten 0 mention today. It's going to be tough. Going to be tough for Spivey tomorrow.
He's already on the hot seat. You need a one-handed red zone catch from Minshew.
I do. I need that. Otherwise, he might get eliminated on day number one. But you know what? You guys are laughing, but then you know it's going to be fourth quarter preseason game one. He's going to go off. He's going to go off. 2 touchdowns. You're going to want him back on the island.
If he goes off for 2 touchdowns, I'll be honest.
I think he gets invited back. You get 2 touchdowns in a preseason game, you get back on the island immediately.
Wow, and we got to do a double elimination?
Yes, of course. Ooh. You get 2 touchdowns in a preseason game, you are back on Camp Darling Island. All right, let's get to the trash of the day. No, we do not have an update on Becca. There is no Becca update. Cody's been driving all over the city looking for her. We do not have
an
update.
Did you go to Lee Summit yet?
Somebody sent me a picture. It does exist.
This man went around
the metro trying to get in touch with Becca.
There was a graffiti in St. Joe that had Becca on it too. It's weird.
For real?
No.
Let's see it.
Yeah, Cody went and is trying to search for her as well now. You're in on it.
All right, let's get to a couple here. This one takes us to Florida. A man driving a lawnmower on a Florida toll road was arrested. We've had something similar to this before on Trash of the Day, but this gentleman was arrested on Friday after driving a riding lawnmower on Suncoast Parkway while intoxicated. Florida Highway Patrol troopers received multiple reports of an erratic vehicle on the highway shoulder, and they found this gentleman showing clear signs of impairment, including pinpoint pupils and flushed skin. He refused sobriety tests, failed to provide a urine sample. He was charged with DUI, released on a $500 bond. And yeah, this is not the first DUI case involving a lawnmower in the state, as Florida classifies them as vehicles subject to drunk driving rules. Have you guys ever had a riding lawnmower anyway? You have the yard for it.
I have. So I don't know if it'd like tip over. It's so steep. Oh.
You got to be kind of careful.
The hill might be a little rough for the riding mower. I've used a riding lawnmower, including one of those zero turn ones with like the levers.
Ones where you stand up too?
Yeah. Oh, those are
the ones that go those fast. Those ones zip through a yard quick.
Every time I see them doing like the apartment complex not far from me, I'm like, can you please just take that thing right up the yard? Just real quick. No big deal.
It'll take them 5 minutes.
Here's a 30 spot. Just real quick. No, but you don't have to
drive that mow your lawn? In some states now.
It does seem kind of crazy you could get a DUI at a mower, but I don't know.
But he was also driving on, like, that's
on
the
highway
like,
or whatever.
He wasn't in his neighborhood. This guy was on the highway.
That, fine. But if I'm in my yard, what's it matter if I've
got... going to bug you if that's the case.
You're worried I'm going to run over my own arm? The only person I can hurt is me in this scenario,
look,
right?
If you're in your own yard and you have a riding lawnmower and you got a beer in your hand while you're... Nobody's going to bug you, okay?
The minute you
start taking the lawnmower down the street to the Quick Trip, that's when you got a problem.
Yeah. Yeah, you got to draw a line.
Did you see some states are now, you know, like on the highway, obviously they still have to, you know, keep the grass mowed and everything on the on the side of the highways and everything. And so to keep their workers, whether it's, you know, I don't know if they're doing this in Kansas or not, but whatever Department of Transportation worker in whatever state, they have robot-like lawnmowers now. Instead of having, like, workers near the highway on these weird slanted hills.
Oh, doing the robots.
They're doing robot mowers on a lot of these highways.
I got to say, that's what I'm going to do eventually on this hill. This hill from my front yard, I'm going to be a robot mower guy.
You're just going to sit there on your deck and just
I'm going to do the one that does it like a Roomba. I'm I'm just going to map out the damn yard and then kick around.
Yeah, those have been around for a while.
Expensive.
It is funny that this story came up. It's funny that the story came up. I haven't driven a lawnmower on a highway, but in Pensacola, there was a gas station that was maybe a 5-minute drive. This person, every now and then, would drive their lawnmower like on the side of the road. Yeah. Would have like a trailer on the back, and they would go and get bags of ice, pop it in the back of the lawnmower, fill the lawnmower up with gas, and then drive it back home. I would assume.
Huh.
Shout out to Florida. Because it definitely screams Florida. The story does.
That is the trash of the day. Up next, we've got an update on Bobby Witt Jr. Some media that are in Chicago getting us that update. We'll talk to you about Bobby Witt not being in the lineup. That's coming up right here on Cody and Gold.
Welcome in to the Chiefs Red Half Hour. Every day at 11:30 with Cody and Gold on your new home for Chiefs football. 96.5, The Fan.
It is the Chiefs Red Half Hour.
Brought to you by All Weather Decks, Kansas City's most respected deck builder. Check them out at allweatherdecks.net.
A little different Red Half Hour today because we're off in 30 minutes. Royals Day game. That's why we're not at camp today. We're back in St. Joe tomorrow. We'll have a member of the Chiefs join us on the show. We'll find out who that player is tomorrow as well. And it'll be the only station broadcasting live from camp. We'll be back there. Looking forward to that.
Do you want to skip half our show and just like hang out or no? You want to do the whole show up there?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
Just hypothetically, yes. You know. Sometimes people do it that way.
We'll get to some Chiefs in a second, but I teased it before the break. We know we've been keeping an eye on what's going on in Chicago because the Royals are taking on the Cubs. And one, there was the roster move earlier. MJ Melendez is in Chicago now. He was called back up from AAA. Nick Lofton on the 7-day concussion list. But also Bobby Wood Jr. was not in the lineup. Last night, we all know he tweaked his knee a little bit. His spike got caught during that at-bat. Now, he never left the game, but he was already not playing shortstop yesterday. He was DHing. And Bobby Wood Jr. had not had a day off all year. Last year, he played 161 games. And so him not being in the lineup, of course, people are concerned. It was Pete Grathoff over at The Star just tweeted out, Royals Bobby Wood Jr. said his leg is fine. He's just getting a day off. He could have played if needed. So that is obviously great news. They already have an off day tomorrow. So you steal 2 days of an off. Basically, you get 2 days off. Be right before a homestand this weekend. So it sounds like avoided any sort of long-term thing there, which is obviously great news for the Royals, for Bobby Wood Jr., for the Wittesons.
Yeah, I always get a little bit worried. You know, anytime a player like Bobby Wood Jr., who never misses any time, misses time, you're always like, you okay? And he said he's fine, so that's good. It is kind of it's a getaway day lineup. I'm not going to try to pretend like it's not
no
today.
No question. Yeah.
It definitely has that kind of energy. So they're going to need Seth Lugo in an audition for a team that is reportedly interested in him. Going today for the Royals, obviously, Vern's On Deck show starting today at noon, and then the Royals baseball start a little after 1 o'clock there in Chicago, like you said. Hard to beat Chicago, Wrigley Field, day game baseball.
Man, it's classic.
Just feels right.
Classic. I'm very jealous of some of you guys have sent us some photos of being there at Wrigley, and just also the surrounding area, right? Wrigleyville, and just, you know, a day game there. You hang out an hour or two before at the bars across the street, then afterwards you can hang out. Like, it's a great setup, and I need to go there again, man. I haven't been since they renovated it and done some new video boards and stuff, and I think it was 2012 or something. Yeah. I was there.
I know you've been staying in tune, so I guess because you're the guy you host the show with on Saturdays out of Washington, so you pay a little bit more attention, I think, to DC sports than most. So I guess I'll ask you, since we talked about all these other teams, Terry McLaurin gonna show up to work eventually? Or like, anytime a star player, like one of the better wide receivers, I'm not saying he's the best wide receiver, but certainly their best receiver for a team that is trying to maintain the balance they had last year, which is we made the NFC title game. They brought in Debo. They got their sights set on big, big things. Like, let's get to a Super Bowl. Let's stay where we are. Immediately getting in a fight with your wide receiver, your best wide receiver, feels like a weird way to start the season.
Yeah, so he did not show up to camp. He's now officially on the reserve, or did not, you know, report list there for the Commanders. And yeah, on Saturdays, I do a show with Grant Paulson, who hosts a sister station we have in D.C., also called The Fan. Naturally,
you guys both work for The Fan.
That's right. We talked about the Saturday, and I wanted to get his feel on it anyway. And essentially what has happened is Terry McLaurin has been the face of that franchise for a long time. He has dealt with some pitiful teams, and he's been a team player. He said all the right things. And, you know, he could have asked for trades a long time ago and everything, right? He's a fan favorite, and he's a very good wide receiver. And you're right. Nobody's saying he's a top 5 or top 10 receiver, but he's a very good wide receiver. Well, he wants to get a new contract. He turns 30 though in September, and he wants to be paid like a guy probably that's not about to have 3 years of the contract when he's 32, 33 years old. And he's not the first player that's wanted this, but that's basically the issue, is that he probably, for his age, is there a chance that when he's 33, he's been making more than he probably should? Yes. But the argument is, this is a guy that has, as I said, been a complete pro for you and a face of the franchise, said all the right things, and you guys probably should just go ahead and take care of him. Now, he was at a car dealership last week, and he had some comments voicing his frustration. Seems like they're very far apart. This is the first time their new ownership group is facing any scrutiny from fans, because everything's been kumbaya at this point in time.
And he's been like the guy who's been the team player you mentioned the entire time. Look, he's way underpaid based on what wide receivers get paid, but all wide receivers are underpaid right now because they haven't caught up to the market with the guys who were free agents before.
Yeah, and he has a year left. Like, this is not a situation where like they're going to tag him this year thing, but he wants a new deal that gets him to the market rate. And right now he's making a $25 million cap hit this year. And then he's a free agent after this season. But yeah, he's going to be 30. I think they get a deal done eventually, but this is going to be another one to watch. Add him to the list of Micah Parsons, Trey Hendrickson. I believe that gets us caught up. I guess Trent McDuffie
James
to a
Cook
certain extent, but it's not the same vibe.
He wants a new deal.
James Cook is the other big one.
But he showed up.
I think James Cook gets a deal. I think Micah Parsons ends up getting a deal, and I think Terry McLaurin ends up getting a deal.
But what happens, like, this is always the argument I have with a guy like Trey. What happens with Trey if he doesn't get the deal? He claims he will not play unless he gets a new deal. But if you don't play, they still own your rights next year if you just never show up for the team and never participate in anything outside of it, unless you just do the sit-in version of it, where you're technically a member of the team, but you're not, or you're not practicing, or some of the other stuff. He's in Florida. So, like, I don't know that you can actually hold out, other than just to make a point.
Right. I think McLaurin actually, someone was saying, like, I understand why the Commanders are doing this. I would say, actually, I think Terry McLaurin has the leverage. He's got the fans on his side. He also has a rookie quarterback deal. The Commanders have flexibility. They're not paying their quarterback much. So if you think it's going to be a bad deal in 2 or 3 years, the other part is, have you guys seen the wide receiver room? It's not exactly great. They went out inside Deebo Samuel, okay, or traded for him. Like a 1 year, nothing. You've got like a year left. Okay. Nothing deal. He holds a ton of leverage, because if you take away Terry McLaurin in year two of your star quarterback, who the hell is he throwing the football to? I actually think he has plenty of leverage here.
Yeah. I think he's got more than enough. And look, that maybe it's the length of time thing. I get it. He's 30 years old. Maybe you don't want to pay him top wide receiver money, but that's why he wants the security. He wants the money to make sure that he's okay. He's making $25 million this year. He had signed that 3 for $68 a couple of years back, but
they have Terry McLaurin,
market's changed.
Noah Brown, Deebo Samuel, Michael Gallup, and Luke McCaffrey. Now, they drafted a rookie, Jalen Lane. Jalen Lane. So we'll see, man. We'll see what happens. I think they get that figured out.
I think that in order of most likely to get a long-term deal to least likely, he's like second probably for me. Like, the numbers are still probably the most difficult, I think, on that end. I think James Cook is just definitely getting paid. I think Trey Henderson's still the least confident I am out of any of those guys, maybe outside of it. So they're just kind of stuck in a weird spot. Just feels like, I don't know, maybe it just feels like a heavy year of it. Just feels like more than normal or later in the year than normal.
Yeah, people are like misconstruing the leverage part. Someone's like, he doesn't have leverage because
he has to work.
I get that, but I just told you this Commanders team went into the NFC title game last year. That has a star quarterback in his second year. It is win now mode for the Commanders. They're also trying to get a new stadium. The ownership group to this point in time has been just on a complete like magic carpet ride in terms of no criticism at all. So yes, do I think Terry McLaurin is going to miss the entire season? No. There is still value for a franchise like that, or any, when you have a fan favorite player that's stuck with you, that also is important for you to have any bit of success this year, to also do right by the player. So I understand both arguments on the leverage part, but if you're the Commanders, do you want this going on for another month? And that's where I think the player has some leverage. That's all.
Speaking of fan favorite players, we had opened the show talking a little bit about Tyrann Mathieu, who had announced his retirement a day before he was supposed to report to Saints camp yesterday. First off, he just quit because they're bad, right? That doesn't feel like Tyrann Mathieu, but they stink and they're going nowhere. And maybe he's just like, I can't help this team enough. Because that was a surprising retirement.
Yeah, it was surprising. I don't know the answer. We're trying to get him on the show. He's been on the show with us in the last couple months, actually. So you can imagine his phone has been blowing up with the retirement announcement. So maybe we'll get him on the show at some point. But he just, him and his wife, I believe, just welcomed in a new child to the world like a month or so ago. Is that part of it? Is it also that he knows that it's Tyler Shuck or Spencer Rattler or Jake Haner as the quarterback or the brand new head coach and regime, and this year could be long and ugly in New Orleans? I don't know. Maybe it's a combination of both. Maybe he just said, you know, my body's not feeling right. I have no idea. Speculation. But yeah, I was surprised to see that news yesterday. And I still think, you know, despite Twitter arguments and things like that, that rubs the fans the wrong way, I think he was so important to the current run that we're talking about the Chiefs being on. I know it was 3 years of him, not 5 years or 10 years, but the first year he showed up was a complete shift defensively. I think other than Mahomes, the first Super Bowl that this era achieved and won, he was as vocal as anybody leadership wise on the team. I'm not saying he was the second best player on the team. I do think he was one of the top seven players, top five easily. Yeah. Actually, I'd argue top four for that 2019 team.
Behind Tyreek, Mahomes, Jones.
Then him, I would argue.
Yeah, without pulling up the roster.
It doesn't mean other players weren't good, just in terms of Schwartz. Leadership and everything that. Yeah, Schwartz, obviously, but I'm just saying.
Leadership.
Total package. Yeah. Him and Spags shifted the entire defense and culture. Yeah, I think he was so vital for this. And, you know, I think he will get his proper due as time goes on in Kansas City, meaning, you know, there's a lot of texts we've gotten in on the show and tweets yesterday asking about, like, hey, should he be a Ring of Honor guy? You know, should he get invited back to bang the drum and things like that? Yes to both. You know, now it could be a long time. Nobody's saying that he needs to be inducted tomorrow. There's plenty of guys that should be ahead of him on that list. There's guys like Alex Smith that haven't been put in the Ring of Honor yet. It takes time. I mentioned this earlier. Kimball Anders and Tim Grunhardt just got in like a couple years ago, and those guys played 20 years ago or whatever. So
sometimes it takes a while.
It could be 20 years from now. I'm not advocating that he needs to be in the Chiefs Ring of Honor tomorrow. I'm also not saying that he's going to be a first ballot Hall of Famer in Canton, but I think he actually will have a case to be in the Pro Football Hall of Fame when you consider he's an All-Pro, what, three times, Cody? A Super Bowl champion, an All-Decade team member?
Like, there's some that are obvious, right? They get the Longevity Award. That's Kimball Anders. He spent his entire 10-year career as a member of the Kansas City Chiefs. Tom Bahali, a lifetime Chief, right? And one of the, you know, stat leaders in a bunch of their statistical stuff kind of across the board, so kind of makes sense. The part about the Ring of Honor with the Chiefs and Tyron, because I think he's actually got a better argument for Pro Football Hall of Fame than he even does for Chiefs Ring of Honor. So I'm saying this is one of the better players in the league for about a decade. He's an All-Decade team member, three-time first-team All-Pro. He was a fourth-team All-Pro or a second-team All-Pro guy as well, so four technically honors in there. And a million other things. He was on a Super Bowl champion and was the face of a defense, even with a defense of Chris Jones on a Super Bowl champion. I think he was the face of the defense.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, I'm not disagreeing with any of that. Part of it I wonder is, and I understand that this is a organizational decision, not a fan decision. I didn't understand at the time, and you and I as a show didn't understand at the time. And just after 2 years in back-to-back Super Bowl trips, one of which they won, fans were ready to run his ass out of town in year three.
I think some of it was the social media
and
stuff
that got him. That was crazy.
I think I'm with you. I think some fans obviously were turned off by the social media comments that he made.
He'd fire back on fans.
Yeah. And he's a very emotional person. That's how he's always been. And he says what's on his mind. Yeah. He's as approachable as any athlete you'll ever talk to. And we've enjoyed obviously our conversations when he's come on the show before in the past. So I get that. That's why I think it's something where time will have to continue to pass for that.
So you just kind of forget the sourish.
But I hope people don't forget how important he was, especially in the first 2 years that he was in Kansas City and how well he played. I know in year three, people were upset with some of the missed tackles and things like that. But then we saw, and people thought he was washed. Remember, people thought he was washed. Then he went to New Orleans. He actually has played pretty darn well for them. I know the team hasn't had success, but if you go look at some of his numbers, this wasn't a guy that was just done and fell off a cliff after he left Kansas City. He had some good years left still in him.
He played good football the entire time he was in New Orleans.
Yeah,
like that part I never. And I feel the same way about Justin Reed. They're ready to run him out of town too. You guys only got enough juice for 2 years of a safety, and then you're like, get out. If they're still playing good football,
but
it's not quite as...
People just don't value safety as much as maybe they should, or maybe it is properly valued. I don't know. I think some of it is that. You know,
I mean, the Chiefs run them out, too. It's not like they keep them after the 3 years, right?
Yeah, and it was a financial decision, you know. They went younger. The Chiefs weren't, at that time, were not going to pay Tyron going across the age of 30. So they bring in Justin Reed, and now, they're done with Justin Reed. And so now they're going with the youth moment. It's just, it's a business. It's tough, you know. If it otherwise, I mean, I think the Chiefs as an organization actually love Tyron Matthew. I just think they were not going to pay him that kind of money when he went to age 30, just like they moved on. They would love, if Justin Reed was 27 still, he'd still be on the team. It just, that's not how it works.
This is the silliest thing to ding him on the Chiefs Ring of Honor stuff. Not like, you know, that hurts him, is that by the time this is all said and done, let's say Mahomes has 5 rings. It's not crazy. He has 3 now.
Mm-hmm.
And like 8 Super Bowl, 9 Super Bowl appearances. Again, not crazy. He already has 5. So, like, I'm kind of aiming lowish, I feel like, in some ways. He'll get lost in the shuffle a little.
See, I don't think so.
You and I do remember, like, he was
because
the turning point.
I
but
think
like,
fans remember how it all started. I would think.
That was the turning point.
Of course. Well, we would go way back. Start with Andy Reid, and then Mahomes, and then Spags, and Tyron Matthew, and Frank Clark. I mean, but I think Chiefs fans are smart enough to recognize that what the defense was prior, and that the first run to Miami, Tyron Matthew at that point in time was as important as anybody on this team.
I don't disagree, but I think time will fade
maybe
with that,
yeah,
because of
maybe so
championships and Super Bowl appearances and other heroes showing up in other games, because you'll remember these other guys who had these Super Bowl moments or these Super Bowl runs or these things that they were a part of, because if they rack up so many, it's hard if you're only a part of one. Look, I'm not saying he's going to be behind guys who have 2 Super Bowl rings, like Nick Allegretti. I'm just saying, like, you know, it's hard to, I don't know, Nick didn't do anything to deserve that. You get the point. Like, it, in the level of importance of the pantheon of where they are in these titles, I think he'd be a lock for the Chiefs Ring of Honor if they just won the 1 Super Bowl and they were just like a regular franchise who won sometimes and it had been 50 years and he was a part of that thing. I think it'd be no question. I think it'd be no question. But their success hurts him.
When you're in the middle of the most successful run your franchise is ever going to have, it's not like, in general, if you said, oh, they're going to have like 6 guys from this era that get in, you'd be like, that's too many. No, it's not. Not when you think about the run they're on. I mean, most successful run that they, I mean, the Patriots have a bunch of guys they're inducted. Some got in, obviously multiple guys got into Canton, but also their Ring of Honor. It's not just Tom Brady and, you know, Gronk. Those aren't the only 2 guys that are being honored. They have plenty of other guys that are going to have their, I don't know what they call it in Foxborough. I don't know if they have a Ring of Honor or whatever, but their thing is, right?
It's a tough because like the text line's like, it's like the value of the Super Bowl and the turning around of the franchise versus, because someone said, if you only got to put in Eric Berry or Tyron Matthew, who'd you put in? Berry. I mean, he played.
But you can put in both. I don't have to only put in one.
It would be Barry if I could only choose one. But you're right.
Yeah.
Like, and especially
I'm biased too. I've told you at the time, like when they moved on from, like, Tyron Matthew is one of my favorite Chiefs players in the last 15 or 20 years. So,
incredible to cover, very approachable.
But I also think there's just a very strong case for him to get into not only the Chiefs Ring of Honor, but eventually Canton, not a first or second ballot guy, but it's, as time goes on. So we'll see. It's interesting. Congrats to him, though, on a hell of a career. And surprised that he hung it up yesterday. Had an Instagram post with the cleats hanging up, literally, and that was it. So we'll see if we can get him on the show.
Royals baseball coming up in about an hour from now. How did you feel like Rich Hill earned start number 2? Dick Mountain get another start for you after last night's performance?
If they need another one, I mean, who else? So sure.
Well, Dallas Keuchel or
no, just at that point. No, because then I gotta then I also, not my money, but then all of a sudden I think it's $2 million if I call up Keuchel.
Oh,
so
that's right.
No,
yeah,
I'll stick with Rich Hill for another one. Depending on if I end up trading Michael Lorenzen or whatever, then I can talk about Keuchel. The only thing with Rich Hill is boy, you can steal on him. Slow to the plate. Just steal.
Did he need to throw over more?
I don't know.
Or is it just like his motion's so slow there's no choice?
His defense absolutely let him down. I mean, he was fine.
He
was totally fine last night in general. Just defense failed him miserably.
I didn't mind the start out of him. Honestly, the offense, again, this goes back to a lot, like the problem last night was not the performance from Rich Hill. The problem last night was the performance from the offense. Which goes back to the MJ Melendez called back up, and will he, like, here's the one thing
he'll
I will say.
He'll play Friday, my guess is.
Will he? are they going to have, like, seven lefties in the lineup?
I don't know.
John Rave, lefty outfielder.
Yeah, I mean, like, he'll probably... He might be coming off the bench, but he's not playing today. We know that, right? I mean, he's there in Chicago, but I guess he's technically available. They made the roster move official today.
It seems like a repetitive problem with him and John Rave. Both play the corner outfielder. Both are lefties. Would you, for the next week, split time between those two to get a sense of where you are with MJ? Or Rave, the player who has hit better.
I think they're going to.
Do you just leave him?
I think they're going to split time, but like truly, if you're talking from a trade perspective, now look, 4 days is going to make the difference. I don't know. I would just throw MJ Melendez in the lineup the next three straight days, starting Friday, Saturday, Sunday, and just see what happens.
Sure.
I don't think they're going to do that, but that's what I would do. All right. Tomorrow, back in St. Joe. Full show, I can promise you that. Full show, we'll navigate around the weather. There's a chance of rain and stuff up there tomorrow as well. We'll be joined by a member of the Kansas City Chiefs. We'll let you know how practice is going starting at 10 a.m. tomorrow right here on 96.5 The Fan. Up next, though, Vern's On Deck Show as the Royals try to salvage a series win against the Cubs.